Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of February, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Peter Boulay.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. Our friend Peter Boulay is here today. We're going to talk a little bit about assistive technologies as soon as I'm done reading the news, and here's a shocker, it's about assistive technologies.
Good timing.
And there he is, Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Just as you do in the news, like the old days.
Exactly right.
Just like we were talking about.
Exactly right.
There was still a sponsor break on when I was in the car.
Yeah. Steve is notorious for being just on time, except for this week.
Well, it was very apropos because we were sitting there talking about the old days.
We were.
And, you know, all the reminiscing, and he couldn't have pulled that off better being late like he used to be.
Yeah. We were just so busy at work this morning. Yeah.
That's a good thing. And Steve used to assume he was not late if he actually got to say, "And I'm Steve Ray," at the appropriate moment in the thing. Anyway, researchers in Germany studying standards of care in patients with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or more familiar to most people as Lou Gehrig's disease, found a high unmet need for assistive technology devices. Assistive technology devices, or ATDs, are used to aid a patient's mobility and compensate for disease-related communication deficits. ATDs are also vital for the social participation of many people. Some studies have reported that accessing ATDs can be problematic for patients and their caregivers. Among the possible reasons for this are limited availability, inadequate provision of ATDs, and a high administrative burden during the process. Sadly, many people don't know what ATDs are available, which we're hoping to remedy a little bit of today. The researchers set out to determine the frequency of ATDs among ALS patients, the failure rate of ATD access, and the causes of failed procurement, and to identify delays in ATD access. They designed a cohort study to investigate the access of 11,364 ATDs by 1,494 patients in 12 German ALS centers over 4 years. Patients had entered a case management program for ATDs, including a systematic assessment of ATDs on a digital management platform. Results showed that the ATDs needed most were wheelchairs, which were requested by 65% of patients, orthoses, orthopedic extensions to their physical selves, which were requested by 52% of patients, bathroom adaptations requested by 49% of patients, and communication devices requested by 46% of patients. When looking at how many ATDs were needed for each patient, the range appeared to be wide, with 45% of patients needing only 1 to 4, 48% needing 5 to 20, and 7% needing more than 20. The need for ATD was highly prevalent among ALS patients, but there are a lot of other folks who could use ATDs, ranging from the ones we think of, physically, visually, or hearing impaired, to people with arthritis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and other less obvious physical, emotional, and mental challenges that go unmet every day. That's why we have Peter Boulay here with us today, who knows a lot about assistive technology devices and the challenge that life hands us every day. But before we talk to Peter, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is assistive technology devices. And your choices are, I use one or more, I've heard of them, I'm learning a lot, and no clue here. And consistent with our listeners, no clue here is the number one choice with half the votes, followed by I've heard of them. Five of you use one or more, and I'm learning a lot is, of course, nobody. But then we've just started talking about them. So there's a lot of learning left to do. And, of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you head on over to the right side of the page and scroll down under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item in the poll discussion is 10 Feb 18 assistive technology devices. So far, there are five posts from four people, and we would love to have you join that conversation. You can, of course, also join us online right here, live vocally in the studio. You can call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And now, Peter, tell us a little bit about assistive technologies.
Howdy, guys.
Hi there.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's a joy to have you here.
Thank you, guys. I want to start by saying, you know, how did I end up here today? It's the fact that back in April, Nick and I have lunch once in a while. And my mother passed in April and needed a little boost. So we met and we had lunch and hung out a bit. We had talked about my mom's advocacy for people with disabilities. And he asked me, he said, so what are you going to do to carry that on? And kind of said, I wasn't sure. And he said, why don't you come on and talk about this? So here I am, and I'm overjoyed. So I want to make one point is that as I talk about the devices or the software, the hardware, that not everything has to have an expensive price point. That was one of the points I learned when I was younger is that, you know, a $10 step bench compared to a $400 or more Hoyer lift to right. lift someone out of a chair is not always necessary. You know, there are better choices.
I was trying to remember that name. Thank you. Hoyer lifts. Thank you.
My pleasure. And as one thing that you can do is that if you happen to work for a company that has resources, you know, use those resources. Not every company can because of their size or, you know, they're what they do or what they make or whatever, but there's always an option if they have it available, look into it because it's going to save you money and you're probably going to have a better result. Now, as we all know, there are different disabilities and different situations. So what I've tried to do is break this down a little bit. Let's start looking about vision support and blindness. Now, there's some really, really good programs that are out there software-wise. One of the major granddaddy, I say, of the software world for people with vision issues is JAWS Screen Reader. Now, in my work where I do tech support, I hear JAWS recordings all the time when I talk to customers. And I love to hear it because it means people are expanding their view, expanding what they can do. And just giving themselves more of an opportunity. There are also some options built in. Well, not built in, but one I believe is involved with Microsoft called Windows Eyes. There's also one called Magic Screen Reader. And on the smartphones, they have, there's actually called one called a magnifying glass. There's an app there. And I'll be giving Steve links for all of these. Actually, I already have. And a sheet that he can put up later on. And then if you look at physical restrictions, I talked to a couple of friends of mine who have situations, and one of them is Flip Palizzi Rivera. Now, he has cerebral palsy, limited movement in terms of how to control his limbs and be able to type. It doesn't work. So what he has is a very simple device. It's called a head pointer, which is where you have an outfit for your head, and it's just got a rod on it that's got a special tip that's very sensitive. So you can hit keyboards. It works on iPads. It works on iPhones. It's spectacular. And sometimes he goes faster than I do when I'm typing. And then Ben Kramer, a friend of mine who has Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, he uses a trackball and the on-screen keyboard provided by Microsoft. Now, Microsoft Windows does have a lot of features. They got the hotkeys, they got the sticky keys, and the on-screen keyboard is tremendous. Now, for myself, my personal experience is that, and where I work, is that I have shorter arms than, I guess you could say, most people. So my reach is an issue. And trying to reach on a full-size keyboard was not working. So what I did was I get a mini keyboard where I don't need the keys on the right, the extra keypad. So I just have a mini keyboard where that's basically gone, and it works. If it's right between the width of my wheelchair, of my arm bars, so it's very straight on for me. And then what I have is a pad that comes out from my desk, and it gives me the ability to have the mouse right up next to my chair. So I'm not reaching onto the table and causing issues that way. And again, in my work, I happen to have a great connection with a ergonomics group that takes care of any changes that I need as I've gotten older or such. But I get better with age, so we're okay there.
Like a fine line.
I try.
So you're actually very fortunate. You do work for a place that accommodates.
They've been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. Now, you and I were talking at a later lunch about our own mobility issues. Now, you know, you've kind of had a little bit of trouble getting around at times. You've been very plain in saying that. And one of the most common...
My arthritis gets worse.
There you go. And I'm not getting that. So now one of the most common devices that people have is an Alexa or the Google Assistant. That right there is a tremendous device because... You know, you're in one room, Alexa, can you look this up for me? Or find this, or, you know, play sound bites. Here we go. I don't have to leave the room. I'm in my recliner. I'm comfortable, or I'm in a hospital bed if I have to be in a hospital bed in the house, or whatnot. You know, you've got that comfort and that knowledge that, you know, even if you can't get up, oh, I need to call 911. Yep. Can you call 911? Again, it's a safety feature. As much as assistive technology.
Yeah, a lot of people have are getting those smart speakers, whether it's the Echo device or the Google Home or now the HomePod. Is that what they're calling it?
The Apple one, yeah.
Yeah, the Apple one. So while you've always had the ability to use your phone that way if you set it up right, having that extra device... And at $29 when they're on sale, or even $49 list for an Echo Dot or a Google Mini,
you can't beat it.
You can put one in every room and have that capability. And of course, nowadays you can actually call people's phones and everything else. So you know that I've fallen and I can't get up thing. You can call for assistance if you need it, just right through your Google Mini or your Echo Dot or whatever it is. And so that's a very, very nice feature.
I mean, if you're older and you happen to fall a lot, you know, if you take a fall, you've got that control and that safety and knowing, hey, I can call for help. I'm going to be okay.
That's exactly right. They have... devices you can wear, you know, and push the button or whatever that happens to be, and that's fine too. But the knowledge that just with your voice you can call for assistance without moving is a beautiful thing.
It is. It's tremendous.
And a friend of mine who's has nothing wrong with him except he was tired. He calls me and I said, What is that weird echo? He said, well, I just got a Google Mini, and I decided I'd call you from the couch. And he was lying on the couch, and I could hear his wife in the background and their dog and everything else. But, you know, he could make that call from there, and that's a guy who has no issues. So, you know, the ability to do that for someone with issues is great.
Yes.
Laziness is not a valid disability.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? If it were, there'd be a whole hell of a lot more of us disabled. But, yeah, and you're right. I have arthritis, and as it gets worse, particularly in this weather, walking is not my favorite thing to do, but more importantly is typing.
Yes.
I have a lot of trouble typing for any extended length of time anymore. And we'll talk about that after our break. We're going to take a short recess. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, finally.
Peter Boulay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Peter Boulay.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And when we left, I was talking a little bit about being arthritic. My hands are not what they used to be. I can't even play the banjo anymore. That, let me tell you, there's a tragedy. Only for me, not for anybody else. Trust me on this one. For everybody else, it's a benefit.
No, I heard you play before.
Yeah, and he lived through it. See yes. that? There you go.
No, you were good.
I used to make a living playing the banjo. Well, I say a living.
I mean, let's put it this way. I've seen two things. One, you play the playing banjo, and you in a dress.
I have great gams, and don't you forget it.
That is burned into my eyeballs for the rest of my life.
I'm sure it is.
See Nick rolling out on stage in a dress.
Yep. And the pain, I was hot. I'll admit it. I was hot. At any rate, I do have.
But you didn't look that good.
No, I was. But I was very warm. It was a very warm theater. but I do have arthritis, and so I have been using, in my case specifically, the voice input that's built into Google Docs. So I can go to Google Docs and turn that on. It's under Tools and Voice Typing, and I can essentially dictate. So I can say, you know, this, that, and the other, new paragraph, period, semicolon, that stuff, and it all gets properly translated. And you can do the same thing now in Word, and you can do the same thing in one of the iWork.
Well, pretty much all of them. The Mac OS itself has dictation built in.
Right, right.
Windows is adding that. So it's nice that the companies are adding a lot of this stuff to start with. And it's a good start to helping people with disabilities.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's a very nice feature, and it's a good thing that helps those of us who don't type as well as – I used to be a 90-minute a word typist.
Just, I still am once.
That's pretty bad. 90 minutes per word?
90 minutes per word, exactly. I was also a 90 word per minute typist, but that's another story. But you know, people used to say to me, I want to be a computer guy. What's the one thing you need to learn? Type. You need to learn to type. If you want to be a programmer, you better type. But at any rate, that's enough of that. Let's head to the phones. Our first caller is Matt from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hey, what's going on? Can you guys hear me? Can I get a one?
you got a one. There's your one. What's up?
All right. Listen, I got a question. How do I play? I got a really question. I want to play, like, if I talk on the microphone, I go in. I mean, I'm worldwide, baby. I mean, I'm on Pal Talk. I'm on everything. And I want to know, how do I play my sound card through, like, microphone chat? Can you explain that, like how I would like switch a microphone over to like play on my sound card? That's what I really need to know.
Okay, so you'll be, for example, on the mic talking to somebody, and you want to play them a sound clip or a song or something along that line.
Yeah, well, let's say like a YouTube video or whatever. I want my sound card to go directly through Pure Sound and go into the microphone so they can hear it, like without the because I put my microphone to the speaker, and I say it gets distorted. But right. I want to know how to play, like, a live line, like, from my, just the
right.
Sound coming out of my computer to a microphone.
Right. Well, the way you do that actually is with a thing called a mixer, a sound mixer.
Okay.
And you set it all up beforehand. And there are programs that you can download, or I suppose, I don't think there's any you can use online, but there are a bunch of them that are out there. Steve's going to put up a link in just a couple of minutes. And basically what you do is before you start, you say, I want my, MP3 sounds. I want my microphone. I want, you know, whatever the inputs are that you have, I want all of them to go through the mixer. So when I turn them on, they will all work.
Distortion. I don't need no distortion. I just want, like, whatever I'm playing, I want them to hear it, like, directly.
Right, and that's what a mixer does. It all happens inside the computer before it ever reaches your speaker, so there's no distortion.
And that's often a lot cheaper than an external physical mixer where you plug all your mics and sources in and then have one feed into the computer, which is another way to do it. It's just you have to buy hardware for that.
Right, but the software switcher that Steve is going to show you is, I think it's open source, isn't it?
Yeah, free and open source.
It's free and open source, so you just run that on your machine and tell it, I want all of these inputs to go through it.
Basically, like to get played directly so they can
exactly.
hear everything crystal clear. That's what
exactly.
I'm looking for.
Exactly, that's the thing. You
all
got
right.
it.
Thank you guys yep. so much. You guys have a super weekend, man.
You too, Matt. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I use a free open source program on the Mac called Soundflower. To do the same sort of thing. I get a list of all my inputs, and so I can also create a multiple input so that and multiple outputs, so I can grab my iTunes audio and my microphone audio and feed them into one recording program.
Right.
So that becomes the mixer. And I'm seeing if they have a Windows version,
right.
which is probably similar, probably the same core as that audio switcher I just found, the free and open source models.
Right. Well, for our Mac listeners, you should put up a link yeah. to SoundFlower as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so those things work very much like the physical switchers that audio technicians have used for decades.
That giant board.
That
Dave
giant
had.
Board Dave has there. It may not have that many inputs or outputs. And you don't get to play with the sliders when it's just software.
Yeah.
But
not the control like I have here.
Right. But it works, and that's the important part
mm-hmm.
right there.
Yeah.
No, that's excellent. So that should solve your problem, Matt. Once you have that switcher, you should be on your way. Now, we've talked to Pete. We've talked about people with trouble typing. We've talked about a little bit about JAWS.
Right.
So for people with visual disabilities. And there's other screen readers for the Mac and for Linux and for just about everything. And if you have an issue with that stuff, you can almost always find something that will on whatever your operating system is that will assist you in doing those things. But there are places in town that have assistive technology devices all the way from canes to wheelchairs to hearing aids to glasses. We don't think of as assistive technologies, but they are.
It's true.
And so there's a lot of those kind of places around, and the more you need them, the more you need to know that those resources are out there.
But the procedure for that is what's important as well. There's a
right.
process. You can't just walk in and say, I think I need a head pointer. I think I need this or that. What you need to do is, and I've discussed this with my wheelchair mechanic who handles my power chair, Paul Gresdale, out of Westside Medical. And he actually has been certified for a number of years to do this. And what he says is that you need to get an occupational therapist to come and evaluate you so that you're getting really what you need, not what you don't need.
Or what you think you need, which may not be what you actually need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And whether it could be done cheaper, or you're going to put a pile of money into it you don't need to. Or someone else is going to put a pile of money in it they don't want to.
Right, right.
And then what will happen is they come out, they evaluate you, and then someone like Paul would come out and actually do the install or show you. He's a specialist with looking into the features and Windows for that. He's a big advocate of the on-screen keyboard, sticky keys, hotkeys, as I mentioned. There's just so much he can do. Now, I'm fortunate that I don't need a significant amount of that.
Right.
My mini keyboard at work, because I do more typing at work than I do at home.
Right.
At home, I don't have anything. It's a standard operation. But at work, because I do so much more typing, I have to have alterations. But again, if I needed it, I have that resource.
I knew a guy who had lost a hand. I believe, in war. And he was a programmer. And he had a cording keyboard. And essentially, he only had five inputs, but the way it worked, like a chord on a piano.
Right.
The chord he played in some cases, a single letter.
Uh-huh.
He could switch it between single letters and specific words. So he had it programmed. He programmed in C and Java. So he had, he could switch to C or Java and get everything he needed for that.
Uh-huh.
Or if he was just typing words, he could just chord individual letters or whole words. He was way faster than anybody else I have ever met. And I've known professional typists, who earn their living typing for people. And this guy just blew everybody away. But he spent years learning the courting.
Exactly.
It's very much like stenographers in a court case. Everyone has a slightly different way they cord their little steno thing, and they know their thing. And this was very similar, but it was just for one hand. And then at one point he graduated to a glove, so he could just use any surface. He once typed out a couple of sentences on the top of my head.
There's a lot of spacer.
Seen a laser projection keyboard that projects a keyboard on any flat surface, and then as you're typing, your fingers break the beam, and it becomes a real keyboard.
Yep.
I don't know about typing on something that doesn't give a little bit.
Well,
like
and
a
that's
keyboard
the problem
does.
With that. That's the problem that people have. That's why many of us have carpal tunnel, because for years we used keyboards that were crap. Not to put too fine a point on it. And so you don't, the old IBM keyboards, the old clacky keyboards, they were noisy, but I'll tell you what, you could type on them for years and never have a problem because they gave correctly.
Well, no. That's one thing people don't like about the new Mac keyboards is they don't have much of a throw because they're trying to cut down on the potential carpal tunnel issues. But they don't feel right because they don't have a throw that you're
right.
used to. This, the old typewriters had like a 2-inch throw up and
down. Right.
No, we had a guy at Kodak because I'd have to go repair, the stuff in that clicky keyboard. You could hear him down the hallway. It was like he was pounding the keys through the desk.
Yeah. Well, some people were a little much on those things.
Oh, he was very obsessive with it. And literally, we had to replace his keyboard a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Oh, I do that now at work. My manager actually said to me the other day, okay, is it time to buy another one? Because I can feel you through the wall. Now, here's something we did think about. Macros.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, the use of macros where you can pre-program, hitting Control-8 is going to say, have a good day. Again, you could do an unlimited number of macros.
Yep. And those are big. People don't think about them and don't tend to use them much. Of course, one of the problems with that is when you've turned on macros in something like Word,
right.
Now you can get all kinds of malware if you're not careful what you download, et cetera, et cetera. But macros can mean you click one. Esther Vale used to have macros.
Oh, she had. I wound up getting her one keyboard, I remember, and it had the extra, FN and keys that you could do a switch. And she had every one of those programmed, and she knew them.
Yep.
I'd go over to her place, help her out with this or that, a program that. And she, I can do this. And the way the woman would fly through that keyboard was unreal.
Yep.
All the macros.
Yep. And they make life easy.
Yeah. She certainly took full advantage of, every macro that she could think of.
Yep. All right, to the phones. We got a minute or so. We can at least get the question in. We're talking to, I believe it's Zake from Brighton.
Zach.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Zach. I can't read Dave's handwriting.
Well, I'm trying to listen to you guys with three of you in the boat.
It's not a problem. Go ahead. What's up, Zach?
I have a question about Google Music Manager.
Sure.
I have a new laptop, Windows 10, and I have iTunes on it, and I restored, put my iTunes library on there. And I also want to back it up to Google using the Music Manager. But I don't want to back up every song in my library because I already did on the old computer. I just want to back up, you know, a playlist or newly added songs, and I can't figure out any way to do that because otherwise the music manager wants to take every song in the iTunes. I can't selectively upload new songs on the new computer.
Hold on. We're going to take a break. Stay on the line,
okay.
Zach. Stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Belay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and Zach from Brighton. It is 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Peter Boulay.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Zach from Brighton on the line talking about Google Music Manager and iTunes. You there, Zach?
I am.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah, so it looks like in the Music Manager preferences, you can pick a playlist to upload. So you can tell it what playlist to upload, but it doesn't look like you can say all but this playlist.
And the other thing you have to realize is that it's not copying your music. Google Play Music doesn't keep your music on your computer.
Right.
It keeps it in the cloud, so it doesn't matter if it's essentially duplicating songs.
I understand. It's just that, you know, I have DSL, so the upload speeds are not that are low, and it's just going to tie up a lot of bandwidth if I re-upload the music library again.
Yeah.
Well, let it run overnight and then pause it in the morning.
Okay.
That might work.
Yeah, that's probably your best bet. There are certainly times during the day when you're not actually using your bandwidth, and you might as well let Google Play Music own it during those times.
All right, I'll give that a go.
Yeah, it's probably your best bet at this point.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. I've got an astonishing... You're only allowed 50,000 songs for free. If you want to pay, you can have an infinite number of songs up there. Plus, there's a bunch of music that Google has licensed, so they have their own playlists. So I can listen to smooth jazz, or I can listen to, which you'd rather listen, of course, on the air here at Jazz 90.1. But there are other genres you might prefer to listen to over Google Music when you sadly cannot, for some reason, listen on the air. Sorry.
And you can also listen to Soundbites on Google Play Music.
You can also listen to Soundbites on Google Play Music. We're in the podcasts section, so that's kind of nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit. Bill, you there?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi, Nick. This is Bill, some little bird from the public market said I should call in the first hour.
There you go, Bill. What's up?
I have three questions for you. First of all, you know me.
I do.
And Steve knows me, actually, from Patriot Guard Riders. But anyway, first thing, password length suggested. You mentioned that in a meeting I attended the other day, and I failed to write it down. Was it 14 to 18?
Yeah. What we talked about was the fact that long passwords are better than complex passwords.
Right.
Although complex is not bad if you take complex to mean uppercase, lowercase, numbers, symbols. But you can use a phrase or a series of words put together. And we talked about something called rainbow tables.
Yep.
Where they have cracked passwords. The longest rainbow tables I've seen are 14 characters. Although I hear 17 is out there. So
If your password is longer than 14, probably better off being longer than 17 characters, you're safest.
Okay.
And it's again, good. You know, it doesn't have to be 43 left elbow, J22, blah, 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 member, we don't know. It can be, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. Or, you know, there are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. Or that sort of stuff. You know, obviously, don't use either of those, but...
Wait a minute, I can't write that fast.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Okay, great. What's your take on RoboForm?
RoboForm is a pretty neat product. I haven't seen any issues with it yet. I am not currently using it myself, but what I have seen is that it's a pretty good product.
I have to tell you guys, I was listening to your broadcast. I have a radio on in the kitchen, and I have an Alexa device in the living room 35 feet away. And when you said Alexa on your broadcast, it started playing music.
Yeah, I apologize to that.
I didn't think your range was that good.
Yeah, it is. It is good. That's why I started calling it the Echo Dot as opposed to using the A word.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. That's a good idea. Okay, next question. Google Hangouts.
Yeah.
I'd like to put my family together and have them on Google Hangouts on their phone, but my one daughter said, well, I don't want to have my Google email on my phone because it'd be ringing off the hook with new emails.
Sure.
She doesn't have to have her email on the phone to log into Google Hangouts, right?
She can log in directly. She can also take out an entirely, if she wants something there to make it automated, she can take out an entirely separate Gmail address.
But Hangouts, it's its own separate app. So you set the Hangouts app up with the Google address and then just don't set the Mail app up with your Google address. So
right.
It won't happen that way.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Have fun.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yep, and have another cup of coffee at the public market.
Nice.
From the Flower City Coffee Company. Oh, sorry.
As well as it's the newbie's fault for mentioning the A name.
Right.
Yeah, it's we're running into problems on a lot of podcasts and radio shows about the A word, the S word, and the G word.
Right, exactly. And do you know how how Amazon keeps, because you've seen commercials come on that say the A word and they don't trigger your device.
Yeah, they used to, but now they're not.
They don't.
Yeah.
And the way they don't do it is they cut out some of the audio spectrum. No, of the audio spectrum. Like the middle of the audio spectrum, 3,000 to 8,000 hertz or something like that, gets cut out of the word, and it sounds fine to your ear, but the device listens and hears that those frequencies are cut out and knows enough not to trigger. Very cleverly done. Very cleverly done.
So we could really get a lot of our listeners by just, you know, going, okay, Alexis.
Yeah. No, what used to happen is back in the day when I was teaching at RIT, well, I still teach at RIT, but when I was teaching at RIT and Apple iPhones were fairly new and the Alexa, Siri was fairly new on iPhones, the class would end and 50 students would stand up and you'd hear the Siri sound as they're about to do something. And there was always some jerk in the back of the room who'd yell, Siri, phone mom. And there's like 30 kids in the room going, no, mom, no, everything's fine. I didn't mean to call you. It was, I love you, mom. Bye.
Because you can't not call your mom.
If your mom answers the phone, you better be there.
Or when she sees the call ID and you don't keep calling, she'll call you right back.
She'll call the police first, then she'll call you. She'll call the police, the ambulance, the fire department, then she'll call you. It's but that was I kind of waited, and it happened over and over and over in classes. And I always thought all you have to do is wait till you get out in the hall. And most of those jerks won't be there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Couple quick questions here. This one will be for Steve. What time does the Apple Cider meeting start on Wednesday?
This Wednesday at 7 o'clock at East High School, corner of Main and Culver. But if you go into the Ohio entrance by the radio tower, you get right into the forum room where we're at. We're going to be having Phil Dampier from Stop the Cap is going to be talking about the current state of the industry in cord cutting.
That'll be very exciting.
And with all the, you know, the Sling TV and the YouTube TV and all the other offerings now that you can get, Amazon TV, you can get TV channels on the internet. And a lot of people using that to cut down on their cable bill. So the meeting starts at 7. Phil will probably get on about 8 o'clock or so. We go through Q&A and news in the beginning of the meeting. Again, that's at East High at the corner of Main and Culver at 7 o'clock Wednesday night.
And again, if you go in the Ohio Street entrance, you're right there.
Yep.
And all I have to do is convince my sweetie we don't need to go out to dinner. Oh,
yeah,
well.
That's the problem. It happens to be Valentine's Day. So bring your Valentine with you. And of course, the joke was that computer geeks don't have Valentine's.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Okay. Question on mapping drives. I have drives mapped to a drive, 4 terabyte drive. I have hooked to the USB port on the router. Used to be, I had it mapped. It's all set in there. Computer boot up and everything would reconnect. Since one of the Windows updates. Don't ask me which one. I notice I'm getting X's on those. Now, if I double-click it, it reconnects. But is there something I need to go in and change, and where would I find it, to have it just automatically reconnect on boot up?
This is on your network, so it's a network drive.
Correct. I've mapped it. I've mapped different folders to different letters so that I can more quickly back up just by saying, copy this to drive T or P or whatever I'm using, and it just grabs the data because I have the data in its own partition, so it just goes and grabs and drops it. But when I go to do it, it says that's not connected, and I have to go out and reconnect each one of the drives I've mapped because for whatever reason on boot up it's not reconnecting those. Did Windows change something? Obviously, but you know, is there something I can do to go in to fix that?
Oh no, that's Windows 7. Excuse me, I was talking to Steve for a moment.
When I've seen that happen, what I usually do is disconnect and break the mapping, and then go back and map it again, and then make sure I hit the auto reconnect button again.
Okay.
Yeah. There are a couple of ways to do this. One of the things to do is to do it through a batch file that you run every time you start your computer. But there are other ways to do it. And Steve's going to put up a link rather than us taking up time now. Steve's going to put up a link on how to do that. Windows 10. Yeah.
He's kind of the batch guy. So he probably liked the batch file.
That's right.
It's one of the net use commands, right?
Yeah. It's a net use command, but, Steve will put up a link to a site that'll lead you through it instead of us going through all the fiddly bits here.
Okay, I was just wondering if there was a setting I missed in Windows or something that it had unchecked or something.
Yeah, it's Windows. What are you going to do?
Okay. Last question. Every once in a while, well, when I do my backups, I actually go out to a command prompt window and actually use Xcopy. When you use the options in Xcopy, now I did a question mark on it, and it printed them all up for me, and I noticed that when it displays them, it does it in uppercase.
Yeah.
You're supposed to use those options in as uppercase letters? Because way back when, they used to show them as lowercase letters.
Yeah, it used to be in DOS, you did have, case was more important.
Okay.
But since at least Windows 7, you haven't needed to do that. So either upper or lower case. In Linux, upper and lower case matter. So you have like a lowercase s does something and an uppercase s does something else. But in Windows, it is not that way. So you can use either upper or lower case without a problem.
Oh. Okay. Interesting. All righty. Well, thank you very much, Dom, and have a good day.
You too. Have fun.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Windows... Microsoft has changed things innumerable times over the decades, and currently at least, and if you're listening to this 6 months or a year or a week from now, it could change. But right now, the fact is that whether it's uppercase or lowercase doesn't matter for
Windows 10. Like I said, it does matter for Linux. Probably matters for the Mac. Does not matter for Windows 10. Upper and lowercase are irrelevant in terms of parameters.
I wonder if we could change the program he's using to, instead of using a mapped drive letter, use the UNC full path name, which should never change.
Well, theoretically, it would not. And there is a way to map a network drive from the command line. And so what many people do is create a startup batch file.
Yeah, but instead of mapping it to a drive letter H, just use the full network path.
Oh, you could, but then who the heck remembers the network paths?
We just do it once. Assuming it
persists.
Yeah, and the program can save the whole path.
Right. That's what we used to do at work. We would just have a batch file that ran at boot up that mapped all our network drives. Now we don't have to worry about it anymore. And it's a net use command, net use something. Either of those ways works. Either of those ways is fine. And whichever one is easier for you. I always found it easier to just create the batch file once and never have to think about it again. But doing it the other way is fine. And certainly it's not a terrible thing to have to just double click on a thing unless you're using that for automated backup.
Which is what he said he was using.
Right. And then having it auto load is clearly preferable.
It's net use the letter and then the path.
Right.
Yep.
Right. All right. That's it. You've heard the first hour of this show. But you know what? We're having so much fun. We're going to come back and do it all over again for a whole nother hour. So we will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Mr. Peter Belay, and with me, Nick Francesco. And you're going to get a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Don't forget, you can join us 585-966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415. We're going to talk a whole lot more assistive technology and your phone calls on the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Peter Boulay.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you are continuing, for no discernible reason, to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Before we get back to the phones, Peter is here to talk about assistive technology. So I know that lots and lots of our listeners use assistive technologies. We'd love it if you'd call in and talk about what you use and how it works for you and et cetera, et cetera. But in the meantime, we'll go back to the phones. I've stolen you away from the donuts. I apologize.
No, that's all right. I can move around quickly.
Good for you. And we will. You're the one. And we
thank you.
Four wheels beat two legs.
And we will talk to Joe from Cheap,
Tawaga, New York.
There we go.
So,
how are you, Joe?
Unfortunately, if you want to use Google Hangouts, you must use a Google Gmail address. However, you have a couple of options. You can go into the Hangouts program itself, go into the settings, and then you tap on the account, and one of the options under your account is to sign out. That's a persistent setting, so even if you reboot the phone, if Hangouts starts again, it will not log in as Hangouts.
Right.
Unfortunately, if you have Gmail also on your Android device, that will receive your Gmail there too.
Right, but for those of us who don't get, who don't want Gmail on our phones, you can always take out a separate Gmail account that you just never tell anybody.
Sure, and use it only for chat, for example.
That's exactly my point. And that way, and you tell your family, which keeps it private. This is the Gmail address you use on Google Hangouts. And it never, you never use it for anything else. It never goes anywhere else. No one else knows about it. So only somebody who's hitting every single combination of letters in Gmail is going to find it.
Oh, yeah, beauty thing. Nobody knows the VoIP number I'm talking on now. Nobody knows my cell phone number except a very, very few people that I call directly with it.
Right.
Everybody knows my Google Voice number.
Exactly.
It has wonderful anti-voicemail spam features to it. I love it.
Yeah, Google's done an excellent job in terms of spam, both email spam and voicemail spam, in killing it. They've done an excellent job.
Right. I just had those couple of tips for you. If you really don't want to stay like logged into Hangouts all the time, you can shut it off selectively and then log back in when you want.
Thanks, Joe. That's excellent advice. Thanks.
Thanks for your time. Bye bye.
Bye. We have seen. There's two things I really love about Gmail. One, well, several things. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. First, they're free. Secondly, there's not a limit.
Yeah, you can have as many as you want.
And third, the thing I really love is the plus feature. So if my and it's not, by the way, but if my email were nick@gmail.com and I want to sign up for some contest, right? I can sign up at nick+contest@gmail.com. And whatever happens after the plus is ignored by Gmail, so the mail still comes to nick@gmail.com. But now I can easily sort it because my mail program can sort for the plus Gmail, for a plus contest.
Mm-hmm. And then you can yell at companies who sell your email because
yes.
You see who it what email address it came to, right?
That's exactly right. So, you know, you're going to have plus Adobe or plus Woot or plus whoever it is, right? And that tells you who's been selling your address. And also it makes it easy to block. Because if it comes to Nick plus Woot, I can say I don't ever want to see those again. And it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a beautiful thing about Gmail, that plus notation is very nice.
You can also use the period, which is ignored. And so you can have first name, period, last name at gmail.com, which is visually easier to recognize than mixing your letters together, especially if your first name and last name spell something unfortunate when they're mixed together.
Which they sometimes can. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
That's one of those. Wait,
I've got a great news. So give us a call. Particularly about whatever adaptive technology you're using, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And in the meantime, here's a news item. A man in Florida, there's a surprise, claims that one of his Apple AirPods began smoking and later exploded.
Pretty.
Florida's WFLA-TV reports that the man, Jason Colon, was working out at a gym when he noticed smoke coming from the AirPod in his right ear. He immediately took both AirPods out and placed them on a piece of gym equipment while he sought help. But when he returned, the AirPod in question was charred and broken apart. I didn't see it happen, but I mean it was already fried. You can see the flame damage, he said. We've seen reports like this before. Last year, a woman reported that her headphones exploded when she was wearing them on a plane. And, of course, there was the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 debacle in 2016. Lithium-ion batteries are known to overheat and explode, but while AirPods do contain batteries, it's not at all clear that they were the cause of whatever happened to Colon's. Apple has declined to comment on the situation. A company spokesrobot said it would investigate the claim and would reach out to Colon. So how are your Apple AirPods? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, as Steve gingerly opens his AirPod case.
Well, one thing, back away.
Yeah. One thing I get annoyed about is people are using the word explode a little too liberally. I fly rockets. They burn. They don't explode. Right. And so these batteries are swelling.
Right.
But we had a couple laptop batteries this week that had swollen really bad. And sometimes, because the battery is under the trackpad, it'll push up the bottom of the trackpad and break the trackpad, too.
Right.
But the battery in the AirPod is so tiny. It's just so in this little tiny stem is the transmitter, the receiver, the microphone, and the battery.
Right. Well, but I can understand.
Yeah.
Lithium ion batteries, if you flex them incorrectly, they will short.
Yep.
So
yeah.
It is certainly a possibility that the guy banged his head on a piece of equipment or whatever it was.
Or fell.
Or fell or whatever and banged the ear pod and it, in fact, began to swell and then crack the case. Yeah. And I get that. I do.
Apple tells us that in our battery training and safety module that we have to take, that if you drop a battery, dispose of it and replace it.
Well, that's the other thing.
If something drops on it, dispose of it and replace it.
Well, that's the other thing. You might not have, you know, or failed to admit that maybe one fell out of his ear and he accidentally stepped on it.
Or somebody punched him in the head as he went by. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and... accidentally stepped on it a little bit, just enough, to, like you say, to flex it and put it in his ear, and oh, there caused the problem.
But in his defense, he might not even have thought about that.
True.
Right? People, yeah. It falls out of your ear, you pick it up, you stepped on it, you pick it up, you put it back, you
no biggie.
Brush it off, put it back
figure
in your
it can
ear,
take
you think
some,
about it.
Yeah, you think it can take some abuse.
You would assume that, but it really, when it comes to lithium-ion batteries, it really isn't true.
Well, when you do assume, you become the first three letters
that's
of that
exactly
word.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But yeah, so I get it. The guy had an accident, but that doesn't mean that every AirPod is a ticking time bomb waiting to blow your head off.
Well, that's like
it's not a science fiction movie.
Probably literally one in a million.
Yeah, right.
That's like my Note 7. You
that's
know,
right.
I came into the studio every week with it, and gee, that didn't burn down.
Yeah.
And when I turned it in, it was still in good shape. So.
Well, the problem, of course, is statistics.
Oh, yeah.
People don't understand. My doctor once said to me, I've got this stuff I want to put you on. It doubles your risk of heart attack. Well, I was smart enough to say, what's my current risk of heart attack? He said, oh, a little less than 1%. Okay, so now it's going to be less than 2%. You know what? I think I can live with that.
Yeah.
If it was 50%, and now you've doubled it, now I got a problem. But when it's less than 1%, I don't have a problem. Yeah. It's just understanding the statistics. That's the important thing. Is there a 0.001% chance that your ear pod will explode? Okay, or AirPod or whatever the heck they're calling it. Okay, I get that. Get over yourself. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. I'm about to enter the tablet computer world because the keyboard on my laptop is failing.
Uh-huh.
So I've been looking around, and I happen to find on the website of a big box company and another company that there's the Amazon Fire 10 HD, and there's also the Amazon Fire 8. Extremely great price. I mean, I just can't believe what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
But the one I've been trying to research out, the one thing I guess I'm just slow to understand is the special offers that come from Amazon.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the reason they're so cheap is because they will interrupt whatever you're doing to run ads.
And if they said with ads, no one would buy it.
Right. So it's with special offers.
Yeah. So what you're saying then is that I could be just doing, I'm looking at the tablet just to do email and take a look at my newspaper subscriptions.
Uh-huh.
So you're saying if I'm going ahead looking at my emails, suddenly an ad will be popping right into it and interrupting my reading?
Well, I don't know that. I don't have one for that very reason.
Okay.
So I don't know when the ads show up. I know they show up on the home screen.
Yes.
I know they can show up when you're just looking at the tablet, but I honestly do not know if they will interrupt what you're doing In order to show you yet another ad. Right. I'm sure it could.
It might be a scrolling, you know, little window at the bottom like we currently see on web pages.
Right, or a little ad of some sort that pops in at
That's
the bottom.
That's why Chromebooks are still the better deal.
Well, but you know, if what you want is a tablet.
Yep, I'm looking at a tablet. Just want to go over, sit over on the sofa and go ahead, check some email, hold it in my hand, read the newspaper subscriptions that I have. And right. It seems like it should do that. The one part I was wondering then is, do you think Amazon has configured things so that an ad blocker, if I go ahead and use a Firefox web browser, which has, and then use that, Omega block?
Yeah. They call it uBlock. It's microblock. Yeah.
It's a microblock. Do you think that would possibly kill it?
Nope. And here's why. Because... the main reason is that Amazon actually owns the operating system, so they're going to put it down at that level. So it's going to happen long before Microblock or anything else can run. But in addition to that, it's going to run in places where the web browser is not running, like on the home screen or on the lock screen or in another program. So that will not hurt. Now that will not help. I mean, that won't an ad blocker won't help you. Now, I've seen specials where you can get an 8-inch tablet for, you know, under $20.
Right.
At that point, it might be worth it for $20.
Yeah.
Or less. I've seen it for much less, too.
And it looks like I'm on the Amazon website. It looks like the without special offers is less than $20 more.
Right.
So that might be worth not seeing ads, paying, you know, $15.
Yeah, right. That's what I understand. Yeah. Paying $15, and then I couldn't understand. Is that $15 a year, perhaps, or is it a one-time shot
Just
one deal?
Time.
No, I don't think they charge you per year.
Well, it looks like one to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are models that have cellular service, and that would be a monthly charge.
Right. Right. So you may be paying for that. It's important to pay close attention to what the ad actually says.
And a lot of times, that's what you'll see at the big box stores. It will the special low price is if you sign up for cellular service with them. So that's an additional charge they may not tell you is there.
Right.
Up front.
Right. And I would spend a lot of time on the reviews, because if the ads become obtrusive, trust me, the reviewers will know that.
Yeah, I've been trying to find that, and I haven't seen anybody say other than, hey, spend the $15 and you can live with it. Other people have said, I can live with it because what the heck, I just put it to the side, I'm not paying attention to it. And it kind of indicates it's not interrupting you looking at anything that you via your web browser.
Yeah.
But it just kind of looks at what you have been looking at, and then when you leave the web browser, it comes up, and as you said, your homepage or your desktop, whatever you want to call it, it'll start sticking in some ads saying, oh, well, maybe you want to go ahead and buy these type of shoes or something.
Yeah. Right. We've all gotten pretty good at not seeing ads on web pages.
Yeah.
And so the advertisers are noticing that, and so they're making the ads more obtrusive, so they do pop down in front of something to force you to see it.
Yeah. Well, to me, the $15 could be worthwhile, because again, I'm looking at the specs. The older models were crappy, in a way, I guess you could call it. But this latest one that came out this past October is, like, unbelievable.
Right.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Belay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported. It is Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Peter Boulay.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Ed from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I have a question, just a general ask your advice type of a question. Earlier you talked about keyboarding and feeling, et cetera, and I learned on a desktop. And I think the tactile sense between your fingers and your brain just seems to be a little bit better. You can go faster. It gives you a sense of what you're doing. A laptop to me is like scratching a cat. I don't know. Maybe you learn better after you utilize it. But my question is, if I'm going to go out and spend some big bucks, et cetera, And with the thought is I don't need to, you know, fold up my computer and put it under my arm at work and stuff like that and move around. Why would a desktop still not be the way to go if that's, you know, what you like, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm all about desktops. Here's the deal. In general, you pay a significant premium, hundreds of dollars, to shrink a desktop down to the size of a laptop. You get a bigger, better keyboard with a desktop. You get a bigger, better monitor with a desktop. You get much better cooling, which means the machine will last longer with a desktop. I'm all about desktops. I mainly use my desktop for the big things, and my laptop, or actually my Chromebooks, are the things that I take. Is the thing that I take around with me when I'm going out. I don't need a lot of power when I'm out in the world. I need to be able to get to email. I need to be able to get to a website, but I don't need to do whiz bang stuff on my laptop. So Chromebook suits me for all of that with no trouble at all. And a desktop gives me all the power I need for less money at home. Or I can spend the same amount of money and get more RAM, faster processor, yada, yada, yada.
I think a lot of people are, in the last few years, laptops have been outselling desktops significantly. And a lot of people just think they need a laptop to carry around the house. We are seeing in our store a bigger switch and a trend to getting the big desktop, you know, family computer. And then everyone has a tablet. And oftentimes that's less than getting the big laptop.
Right.
Yeah, that's what you're right. Some of the prices are just, $600 or $700. You know, it's startling when you go into the store and see what they, you know, what they offer on a laptop for that much money. I said, man, what's, you know, you wonder if the thing's going to serve you lunch or something. But it just,
yeah.
I think though, I enjoyed the earlier comment about the fellow that, you could hear him typing on his keyboard because it's like driving a car. After a while, you get a sense of, not that you can go faster than the computer, but I think on a desktop, you can be more efficient because if you're doing repetitive type stuff, you know what's coming, et cetera, and, you know, God bless the mouse. I mean, I see, yep, these poor trolls with their laptops forever scrolling around looking for the arrowhead. Where did it go, et cetera? Or you can just on a desktop just grab the mouse and bang, you're there. So I just... I think you just answered my question. The only other problem is, I think, I got rid of all my landline something back like a lot of people. I just have a mobile. Now, if I wanted to get a desktop, then the phone companies, I understand, is going to charge you, obviously, for your DSL, which is, I think, $20. But the caveat is, in order to get $20 a month, you have to have a landline for a phone.
If
so
you're going to bundle, yes.
Bucks a month.
Yes, if you're going to bundle... then that's how you get the cheap deal. Except it's not a cheap deal because you still pay for the phone, which is like $30-$35 a month. So now you're paying $50-$55 as opposed to $60 to just get the internet. And so it's not extremely less expensive, but it's a little less expensive.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you know, there is the phone company has its deals, and Spectrum has its deals, and of course you can get, if you're in the right area, you can get Greenlight. So there's lots of different ways to get your internet connectivity. Some of them have deals with bundling, but look at the full price of the bundle rather than just at the internet portion of that bundle, because you'll find that the bundle is still pretty close in price to the real price of right, just the internet.
Hey, listen, I appreciate the input. That's good advice. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Have fun. We're all about, you know, get what you need, get what you got to get, but be aware of the pricing and be aware of what you're actually getting. It costs them money to shrink the components down to a laptop size. It costs them money to make that hinge that works, you know, a couple of hundred thousand times over the life of the machine. And you could spend that money getting more product in your desktop, than whatever. So that makes sense to me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Brighton, New York. Hi, Judy. What's up?
Hi. I appreciate your show about adaptive devices. And I was wondering about, I appreciated the idea of getting the occupational therapist to find the device that's ready for you, but what about getting your home ready? For example, can you talk about, like, choosing a router that would be both powerful enough and secure enough?
Okay, well,
yeah. In terms of routers, this is the thing that I most love about wireless technology. It's voodoo. It's complete black magic. The problem with wireless technology is that it's radio. So if, for example, I have a super strong, ultra powerful router in one room, and then I'm sitting in the kitchen with a refrigerator between me and that router, I'm going to get no signal.
Right.
So it's not just how powerful your device is. Most of the more expensive home devices are awfully powerful these days. They'll have no trouble giving you as much distance as you need to hit the average home, et cetera, et cetera. The real question is what's
the objects in between.
Right. What's in your line of sight? So if you imagine that all your walls are glass, can
But not leaded glass.
But not leaded glass. That's a problem. Right. But not leaded glass, because I've got those in some of my windows. So I can't get on one side of the porch. I can't get a signal. But if your house were made of glass and you could see your router in the other room, what's in between? Is there a pipe in the wall? Is there a refrigerator in the way? I have a friend whose house, she would sit in the kitchen and everything would be great except once in a while. And we finally, I came over and I said, well, there's your problem. Your microwave is right between you and your router. Well, when it's not running, she got a great signal. And when it was running, she got nothing.
So it's an intermittent failure that's very hard to trace.
Exactly.
And that's another one as well. Here's another intermittent one, Steven's at.
Talking to your mic.
Sorry. Had the same situation in one of my calls at my work and ended up being a fish tank and the heater was going on the fish tank.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody would have thought about that.
Nobody would have thought about that. Brilliant, brilliant deduction.
And you can't solve that over the phone. There are so many phone calls we get. You know, internet's not working right. What's wrong? I don't know until I see it.
And this is where sometimes you need somebody to come in, evaluate it, and you possibly might need what they call range extenders. I had to put one in my house because my house, like Nick's, is built in 1928. And to get the signal a little bit better upstairs, because the router's down in the basement, I put a range extender on it up in the bedroom. And now upstairs gets covered very well. Thank you.
We're also seeing a new type of technology coming out called a mesh router. Google has their mesh router. Eero is a well-known mesh router. And it comes as a kit. With a main router and then satellites that you place around the house. So it is an extender, but it's a new way of extending the network.
All the routers talk to each other.
Right.
So you could put one at one end of the house, one in the middle of the house, another one on the porch, and you can get your backyard, your front yard, your neighbor's yard.
The trouble is they're kind of expensive. You know,
it's like
$600 for a three router mesh for an average size house.
Are there any aspects of that you should be considering for security? Are there any characteristics of the router itself?
Yeah, every router nowadays should have a certain amount of security built in. They should have the ability to say, I want this signal to be encrypted. WPA2 is the best way to go for that. And then all your devices, any modern device can talk WPA2. I used to have a problem in that my daughter's original Mac did not talk WPA2. And so I had a problem with that. But now that's a long gone device.
Some of the old, like Nintendo DS, won't.
Right.
Yeah.
But most of them do now. And so when you set up your router, set it up with WPA2. And that's going to require a password. Which means now you have to go to every wireless device in your home and put in that password. So that's a kind of a pain in the neck. But the reality is that once you do that, your network is pretty secure. Not to say that it can't be broken, but the average person isn't going to do it.
Any thoughts about having a guest sign on for, like, visitors?
Well, that's it. Yeah. You can set up, in many of the newer routers, you can set up a separate network for guests.
Okay.
My suggestion is turn that off until you have guests.
Well, and the other suggestion for that guest network is if you have Internet of Things devices, security cameras, doorbells, things like that, because there have been so many flaws in so many IoT devices, if they're on your main network, the bad guy can break into the camera because the company left the default password on, and then once he's in your network, could get to the rest of your stuff. So by putting your security cameras and thermostats and things like that on the guest network, they're still connected to the internet and can still you can still access them. But if there's an exploit that's found, they generally can't get into your main network of stuff.
Right. So for example, on my network, I have a Cisco router, and I have three networks. There's my home network that all the devices, all the laptops and stuff are on. Then there is a second one that I have some other devices on. And then there is the guest network, which is turned off until I have guests.
Okay. Thank you. This is really very helpful. I appreciate it.
Good. Our pleasure, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
And for those people that want more security, generally speaking, a single router that has two separate wireless networks, there shouldn't be any cross traffic between them.
Right.
But we have seen issues where sometimes there are. And then they get patched. There's a neat little box, the Ubiquiti Edge Router X, which is $50. And what it does is it has five Ethernet ports. So you have one in and four out. And that gives you hardware isolation to create four completely separate networks. And a lot of bigger, more networking type gurus will like this. And so they'll have their IoT stuff on one network. They'll put their house alarm on another network. The guests are on one network. And then your stuff is on the fourth network. And it's a pretty inexpensive little box to do hardware segmentation. It was without going to an expensive router.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
It also has PoE, power over Ethernet,
yep.
Which is pretty nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
Yeah, I've got a Windows 10 machine. I'm using an Asus motherboard in it. And frankly, ever since I upgraded to Windows 10, I have not been able to get sound out of it. When I go to the device manager and look at the device driver for the sound part of the motherboard, it looks like it says it's working okay. Yet I still can't get any sound.
Okay, a couple, well.
Are the speakers plugged into the output jack and not the input jack?
Yeah, that's all been checked. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. One thing, this is an upgrade from 7?
Yes.
Yeah. One thing that often happens is that the, let's just say that Windows is not terribly clever. And sometimes it does not properly upgrade the driver.
Exactly.
And the Windows 7 driver will not work under Windows 10. So it looks like it's working because the driver says, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm healthy. But that driver is doing exactly zero because it's not a Windows 10 driver. So the thing you need to do is go to the manufacturer of your machine. Or motherboard, if you put it together yourself, or however you do that.
Yes.
And find the right Windows 10 driver for that specific chip on that specific motherboard.
Okay.
And then what you want to do is you go in and you then, in the device manager, completely remove the sound card. And then reinstall the sound card, and it'll say, where do I get my driver? And you point it to the driver you downloaded. And it will install that one, and it should work.
Okay.
All right.
I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Excellent. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Boulay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites and Members Report of Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Peter Boulay.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Larry from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
Well, I got something really eerie happen. I got a three-way package, TV, internet, and phone from Time Warner. Got it a year and a half ago. Never hooked up the phone. Don't know anything about the phone or phone number. Last night, I got a phone call from my college. It's like a fundraiser. I just hit the red button to ignore the call.
Right.
Then the caller ID on the screen shows up with my college.
Okay.
I have no clue what the phone number is.
What your phone number is.
Yeah.
It's in the phone book.
It's in the phone book.
And a lot of cold calls like that will just dial every sequential number until they get to the next person that's there.
My college, as soon as I hung up, called me on my so-called landline, which is not connected.
Wow.
I've never used it.
Well, you should call up your alumni association, identify yourself, and ask them what phone numbers they have for you.
I don't know. It's just very strange. I'm wondering, between the time I signed up with Time Warner and disconnected from Frontier, there had been 4 years of not doing anything.
Right.
I wonder if they somehow picked up the old phone number.
It's possible that when you got the Time Warner connection, you talked to them. That's 4 years ago. You might not remember, but you talked to them about migrating your phone number from Frontier.
There had been a four-year gap, and I said, he talked me into the phone. It's a couple dollars more a month. Okay, I'll get it.
Yeah.
That was it. I didn't.
What may have happened is that the college refreshed their phone lists, and they went out and grabbed the latest phone numbers from phone books. Go to Anywho or White Pages and look up yourself and see what phone number's listed.
The other thing is, there used to be a trick. I can't remember the number, but it used to be if you dialed like 555-1212, it would all of a sudden, the phone company would call, or there's a tone, and it would play back.
611.
Yes. 611. It'll tell you your current phone number.
The phone number you're calling from.
What I'm probably going to do is I'm going to open the box, the package that they gave me, connect it, and call myself.
That's just it. You can call yourself with the cell phone too, right?
Yeah, I'm going to call my cell phone from the landline, but it's just where they got a phone number.
Well, that phone number should be on your cable bill too.
I can look there.
You're saying call your cell phone from your landline, and that'll give you the number. Nice idea.
Yeah.
But it's strange because I've never used that line.
It doesn't matter. They know where you are.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Clearly they do.
They hunt you down.
So does Spectrum or Time Warner publish the numbers somewhere?
That's what we're saying. They will publish to a phone.
Because you might want to get it on the do not call list.
Or the unlisted. Well, they charge you extra to be unlisted.
Well.
Right.
Since it was my old college, and that's the only one that's really done it, and I'm not worried about it, but it's just. That just freaked me out.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yep. I get it. No,
where
I get it.
Where did you come from?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Have yourself a great day.
Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome.
Too. The call is coming from inside the house.
Which, at that time, couldn't work because people generally only had one phone line, so you couldn't call yourself from your own house.
Yeah, exactly. I remember seeing that commercial and thinking, how does that even work?
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece again. Hi, Andy.
Hello. For the gentleman who was just on, call Spectrum's help desk and tell them you want to know what your phone number is.
That would work, too.
They'll tell you. If it's not on the bill itself, call them and say, what number did you assign me? I've never used it, but I got a phone call the other night, and I want to know what that number is. They'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're paying for it. They'll tell you.
Yeah, they should tell you, absolutely. Excellent point. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And yeah, there's all kinds of ways you can figure out what it is, but it is a little eerie to have not used the phone for 4 years, and then suddenly there's a call on it.
Yep.
That's.
And if you log into your Spectrum Online account where you pay your bill, there's a section there that will tell you what your phone number is, too.
Right. So. There's a lot of ways to learn it, but I understand Larry's momentary spook.
Now, I there must be some link. So between my son and I have his Amazon wish list on my Amazon account. So that's probably the link. So he'll be researching something, and then I see ads.
Yeah.
Like the thing he's researching. So it's not my account, but it's his wish list. So there's a link between us.
Right. I'm so confused, Google and Amazon and all those places, because I look stuff up all the time about that I'm personally not interested in, but people have asked me questions about whatever. My wife will call me and say, I'm in such and so, can you look up this thing? And so I looked up guy stuff, lady stuff, computer stuff, car stuff, dog stuff. I look up everything. And so I get, I think when I get online, Google just goes, what the hell, just throw them an ad about anything. We don't care anymore.
My ad feed in like January and February is all full of you know, crap I bought my wife for Christmas.
Yeah, I don't need to know about ladies' blouses anymore. It's January.
Romance
novels. Leave me alone. Right.
Yeah. Cooking show. Yeah. But there's sort of no, and I've said this before, but really annoys me is there's no way to tell them you already bought it. Stop showing me ads, especially if it's cheaper.
Exactly. I got an ad the other day for something I had just bought. What in what world is that ad concept going to work?
But here's a worse one. You bought something for your wife for Valentine's Day, and it pops up on her machine the next day.
Yes, that's much worse.
Game over.
Yeah,
You're busted.
That's right.
You search for stuff you want, so it shows up on her account.
That's a nice idea. Now we're talking.
Proactive.
Yeah. That's a nice idea. Honey, have you been looking at such and so's? Oh, yes, I have, dude.
How convenient.
But yeah, that's it. I get the idea, the concept behind figuring out what you search for and then showing you ads for it. But there comes a point at which that's kind of self-defeating.
Yeah, especially after a few months.
Right. So you would think that somebody would be smart enough to say, you know what, I'm not going to show them any more ads for stuff they were searching before Christmas.
Right. Well, it's like me. I looked for WeatherTech for my car.
Yeah.
All right. I looked at them. I bought them. I got them. Now, that's months later. That was, matter of fact, last year.
Yep.
I still don't need to see those ads because, you know what? Those mats aren't wearing out in my vehicle, and I don't need replacements.
That's exactly right. And particularly when the ads are coming from Amazon, which is where you bought the thing that they're showing the ad for.
Yeah.
You know I bought this. Stop showing me ads.
Well, here's one for you. When you go ahead and you research, I'll say head pointers.
Yeah,
and you're getting ads for catheters.
Yeah.
That'll ruin your morning.
Somewhere, somebody said, well, if this person needs a head pointer, they need a catheter, too. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, right up there.
Maybe, I suppose. But you know what? Maybe not.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Not today, and tomorrow's not looking any better.
Yeah, exactly. Today's not your day, and tomorrow's not looking better.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, so yeah, I get it. I do get it. I get why they, you know, I'm a bit of a hypocrite. I'm telling people all the time use ad blockers, and yet the way I make money off the few pennies I make off my website is when people click on ads, and I get that. But when the ads are as semi-generic as mine are, but as opposed to you're on Amazon's site and they're showing you an ad for a thing you just bought. Or you're on Facebook and they're showing you an ad for something you just bought on Amazon. How are you even connected? Stop connecting. Stop. It gets to be a little much when you get right down to it.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, but and I would imagine, Peter, as you researched all this stuff for this week, you're going to start getting some ads for stuff you never wanted to see.
Mm-hmm. Crutches.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah, right. I got, I bought a, we have a very old house, 1800s, and we have a bathtub that is very high-sided. And as my arthritis gets worse, I worry about climbing over that side. So I got a thing that, a handle that attaches to the side of the tub that, you know, I can then hold on to that while I get over. And it's just a very little tiny little grab bar. Very little help, but it's exactly what I need. Well, I'm now getting ads for everything from walkers to wheelchairs to moccasins for artificial limbs to Okay, you've gone a little overboard, folks. Just the tiniest little bit overboard for a guy who looked for a clamp-on grab bar.
Yeah, I'm a little mad at some of the ad blockers because lonely women don't want to meet me anymore. Yeah.
Believe me, there's a lot of lonely women in Facebook who want to be my friend and clearly cannot afford a lot of clothing. I'm kind of shocked by that. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I particularly want to thank Peter Boulay, who was kind enough to come in and share his expertise on assistive technology stuff. It is the birthday of Jimmy Durante. So good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. And we will see you next week. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We will see you in just 166 hours with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. Thanks once again to Peter Boulay, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.